sorry, I should also be remiss. Thank you to Taylor Watts, who is here with us leading in worship. We haven't seen Taylor for like about a year, I think it was, but Michael Verberg is on a choir retreat. And so I sent a message to Taylor. He said, yes, I could totally do that. And then, I don't know if you noticed, we had a new a bass player that was playing with us. His name is Jeremy, and we're thankful that he was able to come and hang out with us as well. So, well, the drummer, no, he's been here a couple of times. That's Angel. So, yeah, I don't know what to call him because he's one that I think is going to come. He's going to be here once a month at least, but then like last month, Mike Meza couldn't make it, so Angel's like, yeah, I can totally do it. So he's been here a couple times, so he's the second drummer. He subs, but he's also regular. So anyway, thankful for Angel, and then we had everyone, Nicole, we had Macy, we had Dave and Ray, and yeah, thank you all. You guys are awesome. Yes, we love our, didn't they sound awesome, by the way? Like, man, I love it. All right. Remember that Matthew 5 is probably the most difficult material that's in all of Scripture in terms of what God is calling us to live as. We haven't got there yet, but essentially I want to tell you what Jesus is leading up to so that you can put into context what these verses are really trying to accomplish. At the end of chapter 5, he says probably the most challenging statement of them all. Like, you think what we've covered so far and then, murder and lust and hatred and divorce is tough. He's eventually going to end it with, be perfect. Well, that pretty much counts us all out. So as we go through this, there had been, during that time, different controversies about certain things like taking oaths, divorce, what does it mean to not commit adultery? And people had different viewpoints on it. The majority viewpoint was a very liberal viewpoint. I think it almost mirrors our own society on what we believe about certain topics. I mean, in today's society, you hear of people divorcing, and it's really, like, is that a shock anymore? Not normally. I mean, it's a shock to the people involved, especially if there was one who was unsuspecting. But you hear people divorce, and it's like, oh, that's part of society. You hear people committing adultery, and it's not that much of a shock anymore. I hear it, and I go, yeah, I've heard the stories. I know all about it. I know that this happens. And it's not quite as a shock. Now, is it a shock to the person who was cheated on? Oh, absolutely. I'm not diminishing that. But as a society, it's really not that big of a deal. Hatred. I'm thankful we still get upset about murder. Right? Vegas shootings. We all say, bad. Okay, well, at least we got. But I admit it, too. We're sitting there watching the news. Teen shot. Husband shoots his wife. It's every day I'm hearing this more and more. And in fact, to the point where the shooting of a human kind of pales in comparison to the death of other things like animals. We're watching, and I've used this illustration, but I'm going to update it now. We're watching Hawaii 5-0. And in this particular episode, it's a guy with his drug-sniffing dog. And they're going in this big, giant drug bust. And they're running through the port. And when all of a sudden, they get ambushed. And the dog, they've essentially humanized because the dog is alerting the owner to where the bad guys are by barking in the direction so that the good guy can turn and shoot and kill him, right? So it's very dramatic. He's like bark, 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 ah, bam, bam, bark, 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 oh, bam, bam. He's like, oh, good boy, yeah, good boy. And finally it gets it, bam, bam, owner is shot. Falls down, blood's pouring out, he's not moving. He's dead. And Heather and I go, oh, that's sad. That's too bad. And then the dog becomes even more humanized because the dog gets angry. How dare you shoot my owner? So the dog starts pursuing the bad guy. And the bad guy's running and the camera angle, and the guy's running. All of a sudden the dog jumps on him and we're cheering for the dog. We're like, bite him, get that bad guy. When all of a sudden you hear a bam and the dog flops over. Blood's pouring. Oh, what was that? Was that you? No, who was that? It was Daisy. Yeah, I heard something. Yeah. As the dog got shot. You're totally illustrating my point. I want to thank you so much. Because that's exactly what Heather did. She looked at this, she goes, that dog better not die. I swear I'm in a riot. Like, she was so sad. And I looked at her, I said, but the guy just got shot. Like, and he's actually dead. I think the dog's going to make it because you don't kill off dogs in, you don't kill the dog off. But kill off the humans all you want. It's no big deal. Like, there were 7 bad guys shot dead, and, you know, the handler shot dead, and so I think another DEA agent shot dead. No one cared about that, but the dog's shot. Oh, my gosh. So murder, even nowadays, it's really not that big of a deal. Yes, Joshua? The dog lived. And yes, they went to emergency room, saved him, and then they humanized the dog even more in this weird ending that I'm like, no dog's ever going to do that. Like, he actually hunted down the grand mastermind of the drug. But like, how would the dog know who the grand mastermind of the drug did? And who was a cop himself? And then the dog disappears because he goes and he's sleeping by the graveside. I don't know if the owner now will like live near, like Miguel. It was weird. Dogs don't do that. But we, you know, we love that. The dog lived. So this is what we're going to talk about, especially when we get into, this is really hitting a lot of the application that we're going to ask about 10 Commandments. So we hit this a little bit ago, are the 10 Commandments still valid? And every time I've done a series on things like the 10 Commandments or talked about sin, you know, we always get to 2 of them that most people go, at least I've got those right. And that's murder and adultery. Most people are going to be like, great, I haven't killed anyone yet, and I haven't committed adultery. So those 2 commandments need not apply. And Jesus turns it on us and says, they do apply. They apply probably more than you think they apply. And you probably transgress these commandments way more often than you think. The purpose of it, why? It's what I said last week. 2 things. It is to drive us to the point where we know we are sinners. Because if you don't know that you're sinful, because this is where society was at. People say, well, I'm really not that bad. I haven't really committed that many sins. And there are people worse than me, like a guy who shoots up a concert in Vegas. Those are the bad guys. I'm the relatively good guy, and I haven't done this. And Jesus is turning on his head saying, I need to have you look in the mirror and look more closely at yourself. But then second of all, to drive us to Christ, and this is where I think, as I've been preparing this, too many pastors don't go, and I'm going to go there to help us understand really from Jesus's point of view. So, murder. Verse 21. You've heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not murder. It's a commandment. It's been said long ago, all the way back in Exodus chapter 20. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother, not biological sibling brother, but fellow human being, how about that? That'd be a more accurate thing. Anyone who is angry with his fellow human being will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother, Raka, which no one has really any idea what that actually means. They think it might just be some sort of disgusting, contemptible. I mean, because doesn't it sound that way? Raka. Like, man, I don't know what that means, but I think you just insulted me. You say, Raka is answerable to the Sanhedrin, but anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. So how do you feel about that? You might be thinking again, murder is not that big of a deal in my world and my sphere, but Jesus drives the point further saying, murder doesn't just happen. right? I mean, it takes some pretty careful planning to haul guns up to a certain suite and knock them out and shoot a bunch of people. This is someone who definitely has hatred in his heart. Normal people that aren't harboring hatred aren't going out and killing people. But all of us have been susceptible to hating someone else. Yes? How badly? How often do you entertain it? Do you often say to yourself, my boss is a pig, and I hate them, and I just wish they were dead? And now sometimes we may say phrases like that. We may even entertain it for maybe 30 seconds, and then hopefully the thought moves on. And then at that point, you've repented from harboring hatred. But it's when you continue to harbor, when things fester and boil, when you have wounds from long ago, people that wronged you, not just last week, last month, last year, but a long time ago, and they hurt you deeply, and you hate them. Are pastors immune to this? No. I still have hatred in my heart. Now, that's a real thing. I'm not just saying that to be like, oh, hey, I'm going to identify with all of you, and I like hate people, that Starbucks barista that screwed up my coffee order, I really hate them. No. I am with you on this, because I read these words, and I'm like, I'm sorry, God, there are certain people that do not deserve my love, period. I hate them. And if I saw them face to face, I wouldn't know what to even do with that. And then Jesus says, you hold hatred in your heart, you have murdered them. You are no better than a Vegas massacre. And I'm like, ouch. But I don't want to hear these words. I don't like any of these words. I think all of them are terrible. I'd like to just skip over and get right to grace. I know that's what you're thinking. Can we get right to the point where Jesus says, I forgive you all your sins and you're just really loved? No. We're going to sit and wallow a little bit in this pain and misery, because that's what I've been doing every time I read this. I'm like, there's got to be a loophole, right? Is there a loophole in hatred? There's got to be a loophole in hatred. Yeah? Like, what happens if that person, like, was really wrong and has never even apologized? Surely, there must be an exception. Did anyone read any exception? I didn't. I didn't see anything in there. And then to say something like, you fool, well, man, that happens frequently in my life. I'm finding that the older I'm getting, the crankier I'm getting. Is this really honestly how it's going to go? Younglings, just stay as innocent and happy as long as possible, because I think there's going to come a day you're going to become old and bitter. And I'm worried about that because I'm getting angrier. Get off my lawn, you punk kids. Are drivers getting worse too? I think drivers are getting worse. Or is it me? Because I have a feeling this might be my angry. They run red. Some people are just, and they do not deserve my love. They don't. They're horrible people. And again, I'm not talking even just that. I'm talking about those who damaged you to no end. The question is, do we hate them? And I think in a la Star Wars, the concept that hatred makes you powerful. It fuels you. I do not feel as strong as when I am hating someone. I feel big because I am filled with such anger. I feel like I can probably do anything. But then you say, oh, but you're supposed to be humble and meek and loving. And I'm like, but no, because I'm strong when I'm hating. And Jesus says, yeah, that's the problem. You're supposed to be weak and relying on God. Yes, Justin, you have a question. I'm going to walk back to you, not because I need to get close to you, but I'm with you. The air conditioner cut off, so I'm going to turn it on. What's your question, Justin?
That's usually why the dark side of Star Wars doesn't really
seem
to win.
But yeah, you know, and it's really actually a good point. When you think of, you know, who wins at the end, does darkness win? Does hatred win? Or does, as the famous hashtag says, does love win? And you find out quickly that we're called to a different belief system. Thankfully, Jesus provides some help in this. Because the other thing, too, is he turns it on its head. Because I could talk a lot about how I hate certain people, but have you ever asked the question, who hates you? Ooh, a lot of people. Yes. And because usually I like to think I'm pretty well liked by most people, but I know and I have come to finally accept this, that I am what some people would call a sandpaper person, because I rub people the wrong way sometimes, and I rub them wrong very badly. And sometimes I say things or do things, and people end up hating me. And the question is, what do I do with this? Because what I would like to do with it is just to tell them, too bad, get over it. I don't care that you hate me. That's your problem, not mine. And then along comes Jesus again. Verse 23. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. I've always wanted to do it, but I've never had the guts to pull it off in a church service. Partially, it's a little bit difficult here at Searchlight since we don't have a dedicated offering time. But I've wanted to have it when it came time to, if I was at a church that collected an offering, is to say, we are not going to collect the offering for the next 10, 15 minutes. Everyone, please get onto your cell phones and call that person who hates you and settle things up. Because that's exactly what Jesus is saying. I mean, can you imagine if a pastor actually said that? Like, we are not going to collect it. If you came today with an offering for the Lord, but you know that something's bad between you and someone else, we want you to leave at this moment. In fact, don't even bring your offering up. What pastor would say that? All pastors would say, well, come up actually first, drop your gift off, and then go and talk so we can have your money first. But no, Jesus is saying, this is so important that your offering to me, your offering to God is less, listen to this, is less important than reconciliation with other people. That should blow your mind away. Yes, Joshua? Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that I have offended more people than I thought I think I know. And imagine if there's probably more people out there that hate me than don't. But this is talking about, we know that this person hates us. And it says, go and settle the matter. Now, the difficulty, I think, is what happens when you go to try to settle the matter and the matter can't be settled? Well, have you followed God's instructions? Then at that point, you've done well. But if you have offended and hurt someone and you know it, but you don't do anything about it, that's where the issue is. Oh, no? Okay. And he goes on to say, which I think is interesting, verse 25, especially if it's something that you really messed up. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it or while you are still with him on the way, or do with him on the way, or he may hand you over to the judge. And the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. I tell you the truth, you will not get out until you've paid the last penny. So if you are responsible for the hurt and pain and anguish of another human being, your job is to quickly go and settle that. It could be as simple as an apology, a letter, a face-to-face, meeting at Starbucks, whatever it takes to say, I am sorry. And if that person lashes back and says, I don't care, I hate you, I'll hate you for the rest of my life, you have done what God has required. But if you constantly are hiding from that, running from that, then you are not taking responsibility. It's one thing for me to preach at you and say, don't hate other people, but it's a little bit harder to say, don't let other people hate you in return. Yes, Joshua, another question. You're very, all right, go for it. Don't settle it by murdering, right, yeah. If someone has something against you, don't settle it by going and killing him, because that would be very bad. Then you would actually be breaking the murder thing. Yes, Nicole. Yeah, it's always tough because I think that the majority of time Jesus asks us to do things, we're not really excited to do them. I mean, we did that last time. When someone slapped you on the right cheek, turn and give them the other cheek, right? Or no, wait, is that today? That's today. These are commands that we don't like. So we do them out of obedience. And I think that when we start doing them out of obedience, maybe even with bad motives, I guess, but that's the motive is I'm trying to follow God's command, which is a good motive. Maybe there's not the deep desire, but then you'll find quickly that as you do this more and more, I have learned this. I am one that I mess up a lot, and I am really good. You can ask Heather about this. I'm really good about shifting the blame to someone else, especially if anyone but me. I mean, that's really all it is. I can probably find someone to blame, especially when Heather and I are fighting. I can usually switch around and blame it on her. And I've learned how to go, okay, yep, no, you're right. I messed up. I hate saying that. It's one of my worst phrases. And the first couple of times I did it kind of almost under compulsion, like, supposed to be, okay, fine. And then I've learned after time. So I think that even if you do it with wrong motives, it eventually, or see, it's not wrong motives, poor motivation. Eventually, it becomes more and more of your DNA. Well, that's a good question. Yeah, Greg. Mm-hmm. Right. And this is where it'll really show its colors in the adultery section. But in this one, that's exactly the point. Have we offended God? Does God have every right to hate us? Yeah. Just count up how many times you sin a day. I mean, it's quite a bit. And he says, come and settle matters. And of course, which is crazy because when I have to deal with another human being that I've offended, I don't know how they're going to take it. They may still hate me. They may lash out at me. They may go and surprise me and say, I forgive you. I did this about 3 months ago to a pastor that had been in my head for a while, a pastor that I think I was pretty certain I had hurt him and hurt him deeply. Because at one point we were good friends and then stuff happened and we were no longer friends. And I'm thinking to myself, and it's one that it was constantly bugging me, and then you read stuff like this and you're like, settle matters. I'm like, but he has every right to hate me. And I don't know how he's going to react. So I emailed him. Couldn't call him. That was tough. I emailed him. And I poured it out and I says, I'm a jerk. You can hate me. And I just want to have it on the record that I apologize. And it was about a week later. Bing. And it's from him. And I'm like, oh gosh, how am I going to read this? And I opened it up and he said, Brother Mark, you have been forgiven with the blood of Jesus Christ. I do not hold anything against you. Those were hard times for all of us. I admire you and thank you for apologizing, but please know I have absolutely nothing but respect and love for you as a fellow pastor, and may God's blessings always be with you. If everyone could be like that. But that's the tough thing. I was blown away that he showed, and thank you know, it kind of restores your faith in pastors, right? Like, hey, because let me tell you, the stuff I did was bad. I'm not joking. The stuff I did was bad, and he forgave me. And I love it when I can have those things happen. So what happens when we talk to God? What happens when we come to God and say, you have every right, God, to hate me. You have every right to destroy me. I'm in the danger of the fires of hell because I say you fool probably 20 times a day to dumb drivers. Isn't it amazing that we actually know the outcome before it's even done? Is God's response to us going to be, you are darn right I hate you. You are darn right that you messed up. You know what? No. You need to sit there. You need to think about it for a little while. You need to then come to a conclusion of how you messed up. Because these are things that we say to other people, or we say to our kids, or we say to our spouses. No, God comes and says, you are forgiven. Do not murder. Settle matters quickly. Don't hate. And if you are hated, fix it. It's literally right there. Okay, well, one wasn't too bad. Adultery. Oh, praise God. I've never committed adultery. This will be easy. Fantastic. You've heard that it was said, do not commit adultery. You know what? I'm going to stop there. Because one thing that I need you to hear, adultery does nothing but damage. I have never, in all my years of ministry, ever seen someone commit adultery and not have some major fallout because of it. So on the surface, I know that most pastors move quickly away from the adultery topic to the lust topic because it hits more people. But let me tell you this. The stuff I see nowadays is getting worse and worse and worse. The adultery cases that come to me are more numerous, and I'm in shock when I see them. If you have had someone commit adultery on you, you could stand up here and testify to the pain, the misery, the heartache, the sleepless nights, the constant whys. You could tell me all about how you feel inferior now as a person because you're always comparing yourself to everyone else, thinking, am I as beautiful? Am I as handsome? Do I have the long hair? Do I have the strong muscles? And this is not just to the guys, but this is to the girls, because I cannot tell you how many more cases of adultery are now coming from the female committing the adultery. Some people say, but my marriage is difficult. Oh, and by the way, if you're dating, this would also apply as well. Because I always say, if you're dating, you should be at least trying to figure out how do I, you know, do this relationship because it's giving me practice for later on. So if you are in a committed relationship dating-wise, you are not supposed to be seeing other people, okay? The Bachelor is not a reality TV show. It is the most unrealistic TV show. Who here would like to date a guy that's dating 24 other women at the same time? Dumbest show, I swear. But hilarious because these people are crazy. Adultery from either side is bad. If you are dating, you don't date other people. If you are being tempted to date someone else because your relationship here is not working out well, you are, because you're in the dating relationship, you have the authority to break up here to go over there. Did you get the order? Not, well, let me see if this works out, because if this doesn't work out, I'm going back over here. Wrong. Don't start practicing now. Worst concept in the world. Instead, be honorable, break up, and then start dating. Husbands and wives, there is no dating other people. Period. If you, and I'm going to give you a couple of things that I've learned throughout the years through my counseling situations. If you are texting with someone that you quickly erase the texts so that your partner doesn't see them because they might be upset with what is sent to you, you're already there. If your desire is to see someone else, not your spouse or boyfriend, girlfriend, but to see someone else and you find yourself looking forward to seeing that person because of the feelings that it does in you, you are already there. You are already in trouble. And I'm telling you, don't do it. I am shocked at how many times I see this happen and it may feel good. It may make you feel alive. It may make you feel like, oh, someone else really likes me. Oh my gosh, someone else is really into this. This is in so, like, this feeds me, like I feel alive again. Well, I may feel good, but let me tell you and by the way, it will be found out. I've only dealt with a couple of cases where someone was able to hide it, like for long periods of time, but it eventually gets you. And when it does, the devastation and the long-term damage between you and your spouse, if it does work, then your relationship is never the same ever again. Never. It will be different. And you have to ask yourself, is it worth it? So these are things you have to start saying. And I say this to you, please, because I am tired of seeing this. All right. So don't commit adultery. And again, maybe you're feeling pretty good. But I tell you, anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Fabulous. How you feeling now? Oh, yeah, girls, don't like, oh, that's right, yeah, get those men. Yeah, don't look at another woman lustfully. But please, how often I've seen it on, now I'm not privy on all of the stuff, Facebook, and I'm only a Facebook, Instagram guy, I'm not the Snapchat guy, I don't have enough, and I tried Twitter, but I can't, I just don't have time, it's killing me. How many times I've seen girls see a picture of a guy, and it's always the same thing? Oh, that jawline. Oh, his physique. Oh, his eyes. And I'm like, you guys got to stop looking at pictures of me. I mean, I know I'm cute and all, but please. What was that? That hair. Oh, my gosh. Girls, you are in danger when you look at another guy lustfully. You've just committed adultery. Is there a question? Oh, I saw a hand. Oh, Harold. Oh, yeah. 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 Look, but don't touch. Yeah. And the question, though, becomes, what's the definition of look? So, question, if I am looking out at you and I see a beautiful woman, you are all beautiful. You are all beautiful. And I look at you, am I committing adultery? No, because if that's the case, don't go to the beach, because I swear, the beach, it's bad, it's getting worse. The beach, because it's all right there. This is the difference. Blah, 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 talking with wife, oh, beautiful, and then girl bikini walks by, and blah, 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 that's it. Now, it'd be worse if it goes, oh, blah, 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 oh, girl with bikini. Because you all know what happens next. Whack! That's the difference. Because is it okay to appreciate the beauty in the world around us? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know who said it, but I've heard it said so many times, but it is one of the greatest phrases. It says, you know, you can't stop a bird from pooping on your head, but you can prevent the bird from making a nest in your hair. So you can't stop them from, you know, messing you. Like, there's going to be bird poop that's going to come when your eyes wander. But then the idea is, how long does that stay in there? Do you start the fantasy process? If you start going into the fantasy process, you are already in trouble. And I've taught our teenagers and our married people that the appropriate answer when you are sitting there with your significant other and someone walks by and she asks that dreaded, horrible, no good question, is she prettier than me? First of all, women, stop asking the question. You don't want to hear the answer sometimes. But I've said, there's an answer to that. And the answer is not yes, and the answer is not no. Because if the answer is yes, you're going to get hit. If the answer is no, she knows you're lying, you're going to get hit. So the answer is, there is no one that is more important and more beautiful to me than you. Right? Was that nice? Was that good? Yes. Yes, that's good. That's good. Just don't ask the question, though, in the first place. Because there is beauty all around us. There are pretty, and because guys could do, but it's so weird. Guys don't do, you know what? Guys do this to your girlfriends. This would be hilarious, I think. You know, some guy in this physique goes by, because no guy would ever look at him and say, do you think he's better looking than me? Has any guy ever asked that of any girl ever in all of mankind's history? Probably in a joke. Guys do it just for the fun of it. We'll get them back a little bit. And girls, what's your response? Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love it. Love it. Yeah, she's good. She's learned this. This is good. Because beautiful people are all around us. Admiring and saying that someone is beautiful is not lust. That is not sin. But when you start letting that idea bounce in your head. And this is when we're starting to see even more. Is murder, is hatred, is having a dislike for someone a sin? No, I don't think it is. I think like, this person just punched me in the face. I kind of dislike them right now. But if I start letting that idea float and roam and roll and go, ooh, you know what? Maybe if I do this, or what if I do this, or what if I do this? And the same thing holds true of lust. And by the way, does it hold true of any of the commandments? Stealing? Coveting? Skipping church? Living not like a Christian? Honoring something other than God? Haven't we all done this? Started maybe as an idea, and then it germinated and kept going and going and going? Yeah. And then he gets even, like, this is how important this is. Because you might go, oh, well, you know, how important is this? Like, how serious is Jesus? If your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. At the communion tables, there will be knives provided for all of you. Why are we not all blind right now? Why are we not all handless? Because if we were all handless, we wouldn't have a drummer anymore. It'd be really bad. No guitar players. It'd be tough. Yeah, Jim?
Well, after you chop off the first hand, you can't chop off the second.
Yeah, you have to get someone else to help you. You're like, can you please chop off my hand for me? Yeah. So question, if your right eye causes you to sin, how much will your left eye cause you to sin? It can blind people lust? Oh, I think so. Because where does lust really begin with? Heart, the brain, right? They've proven this. What's the most sexual part of the body? Brain, it's all here where you're thinking things. Yeah, if you're handless, can you still sin? Yeah. Jesus is saying something here. When it comes to getting rid of sin, it is so important that you get rid of it and get rid of it well. And this is the reason why when you start getting into other topics, I could do a whole sermon, I've done it before, all on pornography. I'm not going to do that. But when it comes to pornography, what should you do with that? Should you go, I think I can handle it? Or do you chop it off? You chop it off. If you are getting tempted in certain ways, stop the temptation. Just don't be around it. I counseled one guy at a church in Arizona. He came for me from another congregation. So I don't even know the guy's name anymore. I doubt he listens to any of my sermons. But he came to me one day and he goes, I'm having a problem. I go, what's your problem? He goes, I am married, but there is this girl at work, and she is a secretary, and she is young, and she is Latina, and she is tan, and she is toned, and she is firm, and she is beautiful, and I've been buying her flowers, and I've been buying her things, and I'm looking at him like, did you do any of that for your current wife? And he's like, no, I am stuck. What do I do? And I looked at him and I said, the craziest advice, I was just a vicar. Like, I'm not even a real pastor. I'm just like a practice pastor. I looked at him and I said, quit your job. And he looked at me and he went, what? I said, quit your job. I said, what do you do for a living? He goes, I'm a welder. I go, how many welding jobs are out there? He goes, oh, there's tons. I said, quit your job. Come back in 2 weeks. See how it goes. Came back in 2 weeks. Guess what happened? He quit his job. And he says, my marriage has never been stronger. He says, I can't believe it. I was such an idiot. Every single time I've dealt with things like this, and you have these kind of momentary lapses where you start with this fantasy and you start maybe going down a track you're not supposed to, every single time someone's chopped it off, like you would think, like, oh, if you chop off a hand, that's going to hurt. No, you're going to come back actually stronger than before. So if you are sinning, if you have issues with pornography, get rid of your phone. But I can't live without. So it's better for you to just then stay stuck in pornography for the rest of your life and then maybe end up being in the dangers of hell itself? Oh. Yeah, or get one of those phones that does nothing but calls people. Wouldn't that be a crazy thing? Yeah, old school flip phones. Yeah. What happens if you are connected with someone who is a good friend, but it's getting more than being friends, and now you're brushing up against each other, and now there's physical touch, and now there's this and that. What do you do? You drop them like a hot rock, but they're my friend. I don't care. I don't. Because it's better for you to drop it, stay committed, or otherwise you might be in the dangers of ruining absolutely everything. And by the way, I would also say this is true of dating relationships, though maybe not with the same strength as Jesus with adultery, but it is still the truth. And again, why is this? We go back to what Craig had mentioned, which I had said that most pastors don't go there. How often have we cheated on God? How often have we looked at other things in this world lustfully? Oh man, the lotto is up to 88 million. If I win the lotto, I would donate 10%. Yeah. But then I'd buy a bigger house. I'd finally buy a nice car, and I wouldn't shop at Target anymore. I would move up to, what's the next one higher? I don't know what Target is as high as I go. Nordstrom's. And we start fantasizing. What are we doing? We're cheating on God. You're cheating on God. Because what did God say? God said, I'm going to take care of you. I will provide for your every need. And you're sitting there going, but I want more. You've just committed adultery. Yes, Jeff. Oh, and all the girls are like, yeah, that's exactly right. Anytime we can, because when we don't engage in that, what are we saying to our wives? And vice versa, please. We're saying this relationship is the most important. Oh, and by the way, I can do stats after stats. Well, we'll get there with divorce. I'll wait on that. Some of the people put such hedges around their relationships, it's incredible. I have found, because I remember when I heard stories of what Billy Graham would do and some of these people, some of the things were like ridiculous. I know some of these like megachurch pastors, they have some of the most ridiculous standards. Like Billy Graham was noted for when he was in a hotel and he was on an elevator, if a female entered the elevator, he exited the elevator. And I'm like, man, what are you, crazy? Like, can't really even like live your life at that point. And he says, it gets harder and harder as the years go on. I go, what? It gets harder? It gets more difficult than it is now? And he says, yeah, the older I get, the more I'm tempted, the more I struggle. And I'm like, oh my goodness, we are all in trouble. And he's like, I got to do everything I can to protect myself, my ministry, my faith, relationship with my spouse, my kids. Yeah. Don't mess with it. All right, divorce. Oh, this is going to be fun. And I say this because I'm fully aware that there are many people sitting in my midst that are people that struggle with divorce. And again, for some of you, I may know your full story or I may not. Some of it, you may have divorced for good reasons. Maybe you've divorced for bad reasons. And I'm going to tell you this. This is not intended for you to feel like full weight of guilt and anger and hatred of God upon you. This is more designed for those people that are struggling in their relationships now, and you may be contemplating divorce. And this is what Jesus says. It has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for marital unfaithfulness, causes her to become an adulteress, and anyone who marries the divorced woman commits adultery. So if you divorced, you're female, you became an adulteress. And men, you made her an adulteress. And then if you are divorced and then you remarried, you become an adulterer. Now again, this is not designed to try to put people into shame of where they're at. Because again, I don't know your full story. Maybe you divorced for very scriptural reasons. Or maybe you didn't. The point of the matter is, with every single one of these things, what do I say? Can someone who looks at pornography 24 hours a day, can they be redeemed and forgiven? Yeah. Has anyone who's cheated on their wife, can they be forgiven? Yeah. If you're divorced, you can be forgiven. So that's not the issue here. The issue is, and this is the thing that has been breaking my heart the most. I'm going to speak to a very specific example that I've seen more and more. Women are at an alarming rate divorcing their husbands more than men. It is, if I go through the past 5 or 6 encounters when I've had to like personally deal in a divorce situation, it is almost exclusively women divorcing men. Now, this is how it happens. The woman will say things like, I've tried. I've tried everything. And it's not working. I've tried to give him hints. I've tried to tell him that I'm miserable. I've tried this, I've tried that, I've suggested counseling, nothing. And then she says, finally, the big, huge, giant words to the man. That's it, I'm done. Relationship's over, I'm getting a divorce. Which almost always then causes the man to start listening and get off his butt and start doing something about it. And so the man says, oh my God, what? Okay, we'll go to counseling. And she says, too late. No, I told her, I said, let's go out, let's have date night every week. Too late. And then the worst is then I get called in. And usually by that point, when I sit down and talk with the female, she says, I've tried everything. And I go, come on, let's not lie. There's one thing you haven't tried. Me. Right? Let's try this magical thing called counseling. And then sometimes I'll go into it. What is the offense? And let me tell you, out of the past 4 instances that I've dealt with this, every single one of them has not been because of marital unfaithfulness. It's always things like, he just doesn't listen to me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's every freaking marriage I've ever encountered. Are you serious? He doesn't, you know, he takes me for granted. I'm like his mom. I'm like, and? Yeah, that happens too. And I just can't let, and I said, I don't expect you to continue in that relationship, but what I do expect is the relationship to change. But I expect that in this, you're going to have to come with some reconciliation, some counseling. And she says, I've already tried everything. I said, no, you haven't. You haven't tried everything. I said, how about this? Try me. Try counseling, and if at the end of it, it doesn't work, then I'll say, okay. I actually give them as a challenge, and you know what? The past 4 times, not one of them took me up on it. Not one. And all 4 divorces have happened from the female side. This is an epidemic. Now again, please, yes, is it true for the other side too? Do men do the same thing? Yes, but I'm just saying I'm seeing an alarming rate this thing with women.
I was listening to another pastor, sorry,
Oh, cheating on me. Oh, my gosh. No, that's okay.
I'm talking about a newspaper article where the person had given advice to this woman who wanted to get divorced for a similar situation. And he said, you know what? Don't just divorce him. Get him back for 3 months. Treat him so well. And, you know, really put on your, you know, do the nice dinner that he likes. And have things, you know, watch the football game with him. Surprise him. And then in 3 months, then go ahead and serve him those papers and really, really get him, because then he'll know what he's losing. And of course, the guy calls back 3 months. Well, it's almost time.
Right time, ready to serve.
Are you kidding? I'm so in love with my husband. I've never had a better marriage than moment in my life.
Yeah, yeah. Because a lot of people are under the mistaken question for all my divorced people out there: is divorcing challenging? Is it painful? Are there struggles? Do you have to deal with exes, paternities? You have to deal with patrimony, alimony? Do you have to deal with housing situations, watching the kids? I mean, you get into such a mess, and I'm thinking to myself, do you want to know how much work? I'm telling you, for those who are married and haven't been divorced, if you divorce, it's a lot of hard work. And the better thing to do is pour the hard work that you're going to have to do if you divorce and pour it into your marriage, like Amy had talked about, and you're going to find something crazy happening. Now, again, if you are, I'm just throwing this out there, and I'm also throwing out to anyone who's listening to this, that if you're at the point where you're like, that's it, I'm done, I'm over, please just give me a call. I'm serious. Because there have been times, last four haven't worked out, but there have been other times when I have dealt with people and I was shocked because they decided to try it. I just dealt with one who is not a member of the church. It was actually a friend of Heather's, who the guy just up and left. He's like, I just don't know if I can do this anymore. I can't do this. And she's like, what do I do? And, well, what do you do? I mean, the guy's like left you. And she says, but I want to still love him. I still love him. And we said, then love him. And let him know that. And when it comes time that he sees this and comes back to you, your temptation is going to be to want to hammer the living daylights out of him, forever leaving you in the first place. And all I say is, avoid that temptation. That one worked. I was so happy. He came back because he realized what he had been missing in his kids and his wife, and he came back and was reconciled. So it can happen. It really can, but it takes work. If you are in a relationship and you're like, it is too hard, trust me, it is not too hard. Now, I get this question, I want to make sure and go on record saying this. What happens if your spouse cheats on you? Should you get a divorce? Almost all single ladies will say something to the effect of, if my man ever cheats on me, I'm going to drop him like a hot rock. Am I right? Am I right? Yeah, yeah. I'm right. And even maybe like first year married people, like, oh my gosh, honey, if you cheat on me, that's it. It's done. It's over. I am now up to, when it comes to certain marital infidelity cases, it's now up to 3 in 3. Half of the people, used to be 2 in 3, but just recently I was privileged is the right word. I was involved with another case, and that was one where the guy was cheated on by the girl, and he stayed with her. He stayed with her. Why? Because this is also a picture, a symbol of God's love for us. Because we have cheated on God so many times, and God has every right to look at you and say, you're done. Get out. I'm over. And he doesn't. He still loves. And every single time I've dealt with, even in the ones where they ended up divorcing, the strangest things happen. I was talking with one lady who was cheated on, and she was told by all her family and friends, divorce the guy. He is a bum. And he was a bum. He was an idiot, and he was dumb and stupid and made a horrible, colossal mistake. And I remember she was sitting in my office, and she says, Pastor Mark, though, I can't turn it off. It's not a faucet. Like, shh, I love you. Shh, no more. She says, I can't. Like, I am so angry at him, but I also love him so much. So she stayed. Tons of counseling. And that goes back to the adultery issue. Yeah. Divorce. If someone cheats on you, you do not have to divorce them. In fact, dare I say, it is probably the best picture of what God does for us. But I also know that adultery is such a damaging thing that is the reason why I think God gives an out, saying, this is so painful. It is so destructive that if the relationship dissolves, I understand and I free you of that. But know this, God will not give you a certificate of divorce and send you away. He will not say, though you fantasize about everything other than me, I will not divorce you. I have given my everything to you, and I will love you forever. And if you've ever wanted security or stability, if you've ever wanted to be loved by someone else, then you look no further than God, for that's what he does every day. Let's pray. My Lord, I